You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast. I'm your host, Shotgun Spraling, along with my co-host, Jack Smith. Jack, we finally have some baseball to break down and dissect. Of course, that doesn't mean it was victorious baseball for the USC Trojans.
Yeah, obviously not the most ideal start for USC. We knew they were heading out to Arizona for the MLB Desert Invitational, kind of a far cry from welcoming in Marist like they did at the start of last year. So we knew higher expectations, which means they're going to go out and they're going to play some good teams in Arizona. They're facing bigger competition to start the year. And Shotgun, they kind of got hit in the mouth. 0-3 start to the year for USC. We talked all offseason with the coaches about how do you handle expectations, because there were going to be expectations. With expectations comes people wanting you to win and expecting you to win, and USC didn't go out and win. So we'll see if they can bounce back from that going forward. And obviously, we'll talk about the losses, but I think the words you would use is it's not the most ideal start for USC.
Definitely not ideal. We'll break down each of those games as well as look forward at this week's upcoming action. We're not going to have an interview this week. I just got back from Arizona as well. The team just got back, so we didn't want to immediately rush into that. I've got to get on the road at the end of this week to go to the Bay Area as well. So it's a condensed week. We're going to cut out the interview for this week. We don't have a bunch of fun stuff to talk about. We'll see how they rise to the occasion after this week, and then we'll chat with the coaches and maybe some players later on the season as well, too. But for any newcomers, the Dado Download Podcast is a USC baseball podcast. We break down the latest news and developments about the Trojans program. It's part of the Peristyle Podcast family show. So as always, we ask you guys to like, share, subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform so that you don't miss any of our new episodes talking all things USC, from football to recruiting to basketball, with our wide range of shows. Also, please make sure to leave us a review as we continue to try to grow the show. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can always email them to podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you specify which show it's for in the headline. So if you want to get a baseball question on, put the Dado Download so we know, so that it gets directed to Jack and I, and we can talk about it on the next episode. But Jack, you mentioned it, 0-3 start, and it just wasn't pretty. You know, they did not play very well in really any facet of the game. You know, they lose 8-1 to BYU, 8-1 to Grand Canyon, and 5-2 to Ohio State. What was your overarching big takeaway from the action this weekend?
I think it started with a lot of the stuff that we heard throughout the offseason. What didn't exactly come true in the opener? You know, we talked a lot about potential defensive changes for USC and how that could benefit the group. And then we ended up seeing the kind of the same defense as last year, with one or two newcomers at their normal positions, with Chris Brown at DH and Avery Covarrubias at third. And we saw this team that was a really good defensive team last year, and we had heard this is, you know, a potentially elite defensive group. not play very solid defensively. We saw the Pac-12 leader in ERA, Pac-12 leaders in ERA as the pitching staff, you know, kind of get shelled a little bit in the first couple of games and blow the lead in the third game. And we saw an offense that maybe they didn't have a ton of power coming into the year, but this is supposed to be an offense that's going to hit the ball. They're going to get on base. They're going to go station to station. This is the team last year that got that hit when they needed it with a runner in scoring position, brought in runs, did the little things right. And they just didn't really hit at all this weekend. You know, maybe we weren't expecting to see a bunch of home runs or 450-foot blasts like some other teams were hitting with their elite prospects. But USC went, I think, 3 hits in the first game, 4 hits in the second game, 5 hits in the third game. That's not enough for an entire weekend. You can't win games with 3 hits or 4 hits in college baseball. And I think you're right, Shotgun. It's just not a single facet of the weekend went well for USC, but it was kind of surprised to see it all break down at the start of the season. And maybe that was, they were trying to do a little bit too much. I know you were able to hear from Andy Stankiewicz on how he broke it down, but I just think a lot of the things that we were hearing about this team and expecting from this team, we kind of saw none of that this weekend. And that ultimately led to them losing all 3 games.
Yeah. They just didn't play very well. And it, like I said, in any facet, it wasn't just the pitching. It wasn't just the hitting. It wasn't just the defense, but all of them struggled. You know, they had multiple errors in all 3 games. You mentioned that they hit a lot of fly balls that went to the warning track. Well, that's not really their game. So, you know, they played outside of their, you know, outside of themselves. They played, you know, over their heads a little bit, tried to do too much. And I thought it was interesting when I talked to Andy Stankiewicz, he wasn't necessarily as concerned as I may have been. You know, that, oh, my thought is, this looks like football. This looks like basketball. Team with a ton of expectations coming out and not playing well. Now, the difference is those teams did fine to start the season, and then very soon after the start of the season, you know, football took half of the season, but, you know, the cracks became very evident, where this is the very beginning of the season. And when I talked to Andy Stankiewicz, the thing that stood out to me, he said, you know, you kind of let guys do their own thing and see that it doesn't work, and then say, all right, now you're ready to come back home. You're ready to realize you got to listen. You got to trust what I've been trying to teach you. And then, you know, when you fail to have results, you see that, all right, coach knows what he's talking about. Let me do it his way, and then try to build from there. And in baseball, you can do that a lot more than, you know, football, or, you know, less, to a lesser extent, basketball, but just because there's more games. So you have 56 games in the regular season. So 1 3-game weekend. You can, you know, you can have a mulligan and build your way back up, especially playing against quality opponents. Someone said, I had a couple of tweets say the season's over. They got, you know, I thought this was going to be different. There's no way they can make the tournament. They were calling the Ohio State game a must-win game. One, you're playing 2 power conference teams. People forget BYU is in the Big 12 this year. So you're playing 2 power conference teams. And then Grand Canyon's going to end up winning the WAC. They were the most impressive team I saw out in Arizona outside of a top 5 Oregon State team. So, you know, I think that loss is not going to look bad at the end of the year, because I think they're going to continue to, they're going to roll through the WAC this season. So it's a little bit of an Aaron Rodgers moment. RELAX, guys, relax. It's just 1 weekend. Now, definitely could have some concerns. Don't take that part out of it. Don't say, oh, well, they just don't care at all. No. There's definitely things that need to be fixed. But take a step back, and do you trust this coaching staff that they know what they're doing? That's another question, because some other sports, maybe you don't trust the coaching staff as much as I would put trust in Andy Stankiewicz and the staff that he has assembled around him to get things corrected. Do I think Travis Dew is going to let guys hit long fly balls to the warning track all season without making any adjustments? No, I don't think that's going to happen. Do I think that Seth Etherton is going to find guys that can throw strikes for him rather than, you know, running a bunch of guys out there and having walk issues out of the bullpen? No, I think he'll figure that part out. So it's early in the season. It's a learning experience, and this is something every team out in Arizona is going through at the same time. You know, I saw 11 games in 3 days. I'm still tired from it. We actually were supposed to record a little bit earlier, and I slept through our initial record time because I'm exhausted. There's a lot of games going on, but I talk to every coach after games and stuff and say, you know, what are you trying to learn this first weekend? And it's not always pinpointing one thing or another. It's, all right, I got to see what I got. You know, I got these new guys. We got 20 new guys in. We've got 15 new guys, new faces. I got to see what they can do when the, you know, when the bullets are live and, you know, everything's going. So It is something that there's definitely concerning bits of this weekend, but the overarching weekend is not something to be concerned that the season is over at this point.
Yeah, and not to jump too far ahead, but Chuck, at the end of the episode, we're going to preview some of USC's opponents for this week, and one of them is UC San Diego, a team that USC plays tomorrow. It'll be their first semi-home game played at LMU. UCSD went to the exact same Desert Invitational that USC went to this year. They started out 1-3. They got blown out by GCU and Tennessee. That same UCSD team almost beat USC last year, but finished the season 34-18, won the Big West, and could potentially have gone to the tournament had they not have been, you know, in this D1 shift period where they weren't eligible for postseason play. So they went 1-3, ended up having a good year. Like, this happens to teams all the time. It just, with the expectation that followed USC coming into this season, it's not what you wanted to see if you're a Trojan fan. And I think the ways in which they lost are what's more concerning than the fact that they lost, because this team didn't get blown out a whole ton last year. Now, they had some road games that they didn't play super well, but they found ways to stay in games, and they would get a hit in scoring position every now and then to make things interesting. And it wouldn't really be all three games they couldn't hit of a series or all three games they couldn't pitch. But this weekend, it kind of was like that. The first two games, I think the first one started differently. I don't think Caden Aoki pitched poorly. You know, there were some bits of unluck in there where there was a ground ball single on the infield. There was a flare single. You know, there was an error at third base. Then I think things built off of that. But all in all, I feel like for most of the weekend, USC didn't pitch very well, and they didn't hit very well, and they didn't play defense very well. So I think the ways in which they lost were more concerning than the 0-3 start. And I think we can kind of dissect which ones of those we expect to bounce back sooner maybe than the others, or if these are season-long concerns. But I think the ways in which they lost was more concerning than the fact that they lost the three games.
Yeah, it was interesting you called it bits of unluck for Caden Aoki. Let's start with the Friday game. They open the season against BYU. BYU, a team that's moving into the Big 12, not picked very high in the Big 12, maybe in the bottom, maybe in the cellar itself or a couple spots up, because they got a lot of unknowns as well, which is kind of always the case when you got guys coming back from more remissions and a bunch of things. I actually like this BYU squad that I saw this week. I like some of the things they did. Ben Hansen on the mound starts for BYU and pitched pretty well. You gave it one run in five innings. Caden Aoki, like you mentioned, starts out. He gives up three runs in the second inning, and I was there for that. And they hit one ball hard, and you know, in the entire inning. So it's one of those games. One of those innings. You just like, it happens as a pitcher. He pitched all right, but it started with a leadoff walk. That's where your issue always starts when you're a pitcher. If you walk the leadoff hitter, that guy inevitably feels like he's going to come around and score like 912% of the time. It's, you know, it's one of the biggest pet peeves of any pitching coach is don't walk the leadoff here. Go after him. Make him smash something in the gap or something. You know, early in a game, second inning, it's a 0-0 game. You know, force him to hit it 450 feet. Make him put it in play for the inning to get going and whatnot. And then you have an error. Then you have a bloop single. Then you have an infield single. And they get a double play and get two outs, but then the first hard hit was there was a single up the middle to bring in a second run. But, you know, all the things considered, you don't look like it and go, oh, I don't know about Caden Aoki now. Now, in the fifth inning or the sixth inning, to start the inning off, he walked the leadoff hitter and then he gave up a homer. I was already gone from that game. I stopped by and saw the first three innings, I want to say, and then jumped to a different game that night. But you know, from what I saw, Caden Aoki, I wasn't really concerned. I chatted with him a little bit after the series, and you know, he said that he didn't feel like he pitched terrible, but it was just kind of victim of circumstance in that second inning. And he said, "Yeah, I gave up a homer." But the thing that he's concerned about is those walks. You can't have leadoff walks, and he knows it. What stood out to you about the rest of the game? Like I said, I saw probably the first three innings, and I kind of saw what we ended up seeing throughout the weekend. You know, USC hitting long fly balls and getting nothing out of them. You know, there weren't a ton of line drives everywhere. And, oh, that guy just made a spectacular play on it. It was, oh, he hit it. And the fans go, and it gets caught at the warning track or right in front of the warning track. That happened several times. Ethan Hutchins in particular. Like, I think I started a warning track tracker with you. I don't know if we actually got a full number, but there were several in there for him, including his first at bat. You know, he flied out to left field, and there was, you know, one that pretty well hit, but not well hit enough. What stood out to you in the first game?
Yeah, I think that everything that you said about Caden Aoki's start, I will echo. And some of the walks, you could tell, like, that's maybe a pitch that he missed an inch off the plate that later on in the season when he's in a little bit more of a rhythm, he's able to make that pitch on a 3-2 count, but, you know, would lose a guy here and there. And he is a guy that does pitch to contact. Now, he did have 6 strikeouts, but normally he's more of a pitch to contact guy than strike everyone out, because he wants to throw his changeup and get you to ground out to the left side. He wants to force a double play in a big spot. And sometimes that can happen. You know, an inning like that can happen to a guy that pitches to contact, because when you're inviting teams to hit ground balls and to jam them on the hands and put it in play, there's going to be those weak hits, the ones that just dink in or just slightly roll past the third baseman. So that stuff will happen. And then the home run in the sixth was the guy was hunting a first pitch changeup, and maybe that's just a sequencing thing that he'll work out by the end of the year, but went to the pitch that is his best and the hitter was clearly waiting for it. And it was a long home run, but I think that's one that he can work out later in the year. So I think Caden Aoki, it's a performance you don't have to be worried about. And I think he did get pretty unlucky and we'll work some of that stuff out. But the thing that stood out, it was kind of really early on, and I don't know if maybe hitters were putting too much pressure on themselves, but USC left a lot of guys stranded on base. I want to say the number was 5 through the first 2 innings, and that was in each of the first 2 games. They would get guys on really early. They'd kind of get the gifts that USC was giving other teams where they were getting walked, you know, whether that was the first batter of an inning or with 2 outs, but they just didn't get the hit to bring them in. And they only had 3 hits in the first game, but there were situations there where they were almost invited by BYU making mistakes to get back in the game or take a lead early on. They just couldn't do it. And I think that's something that you'd like to see them work out throughout the season, is be able to get a hit with a runner in scoring position, not strand guys, you know, not have an inability to move someone over or hit a sacrifice fly. That's something that USC kind of struggled with. They only scored 1 run during the game. And then there's not a whole ton that stands out from the bullpen. I thought Channing Austin, like the stuff that we were hearing about, was reflected in his pitching, but also some of the concerns with Channing Austin were reflected. Had 2 walks, but had 2 strikeouts and won an inning. Didn't give up any runs, but when you walk guys, they're going to come back to bite you. And when you're on the road in a Pac-12 series, you hope to not make those mistakes. But I think the biggest thing throughout the entire weekend, and I think you saw it starting up in the first game, was the strikeout shotgun. I mean, USC struck out 9 times on Friday, 13 times on Saturday, and another 9 times on Sunday. And I think you tweeted out yesterday that they averaged something around 7.3 strikeouts a game last year. They were just swinging and missing way too much. And I think that contributed a lot to their hitting with runners in scoring position. Because the first one I remember from Friday was Chris Brown coming up. And I think he swung and missed 3 times in an at-bat with multiple runners in scoring position. And that's just not the stuff that I think you're used to seeing from this team based off last year, and not the way that this team needs to play, because they're not a strikeout a lot and hit a lot of home runs team. They're a team that needs to put the ball in play a lot, force you to make plays, and eventually get those hits.
Yeah, and I think that kind of you saw similar things on the next day. They played Grand Canyon, a game that ends up being 8-1, but was much closer than that. Grand Canyon jumps out to a 3-0 lead early in the first inning, and then USC's trying to play catch-up. And I thought it was notable that when they did score, they scored in the 5th inning, made it 3-1. To pull closer, they immediately gave up a run. And that was something that happened against Ohio State too, where they score and they immediately gave up, you know, they couldn't get that shutdown inning. So that's something that was kind of notable to me too. You saw a little bit of everybody. Stromsborg struggled in the first inning against Grand Canyon on Saturday, and then settled in. His numbers don't look great, you know, 4 innings pitched, 6 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, and 2 walks, but that all the damage was done in the first inning. Leadoff double. Yeah, you know, they manufacture a run, do a good job. Grand Canyon does ground ball to the right side, move them over. They get a sack fly, but then a walk again starts things back up, and then you have a single and a single and they could have got out of that inning with just 1 run. Austin O'Vern throws the ball to third base, and if the ball is caught and the tag is applied, then the runner is going to be out for the third out, and he's going to be out before the run scores because it's big boy Zach York running from second to home. So that would have been the end of the inning. Instead, the ball gets booted and both runs score. And as was the case often this weekend, the ball was booted by Abercrombie Rubius, the freshman playing third base, natural shortstop, first time playing third in a game for USC. He had 2 errors on Friday. He had an error on Saturday. I think he had another one I wouldn't call it an error, but there was a miscommunication with him playing second base on Sunday with a pop fly that drops in. So he had a rough weekend. He definitely did, and we'll see how he bounces back from it. But they had some struggles on defense, and a lot of it centered around the one freshman playing in the infield and him taking his lumps. But after that, Strasburg wasn't great. There was always felt like there was someone kind of on, but he pitched his way through the last three innings, didn't give up anything, and gave him a chance to kind of get back in the game, and they never really did. And then the one run USC has is a solo homer for Joey Gallo. I mean, from Jacob Galloway. And immediately after that, how about the first pitch, or was the first pitch? I think it was the third pitch of the next half inning is a blast by Bo Ankeny from Grand Canyon, who just murdered a ball and was hitting murdering balls all weekend, actually, to give him credit. But immediately gave the run back, and then USC's offense doesn't do anything the rest of the game. Like you said, four hits. Three hits in the first game, four hits in the second game, five hits in the third game. So, got to get the hitting together. But I was a little bit more concerned. The thing that stood out the most to me, watching this is my first full game watching them, was some of the arms out of the bullpen that I expected a little bit more from. And Xavier Martinez got hit a couple bombs. Some walks in the bullpen that I wasn't expecting. I thought Brock Blatter he gave up the bomb to Ankeny, but otherwise, I thought he would look pretty good. That was the only hit he gave up. I thought he was impressive. It's 92-mile-an-hour cutters. It's the breaking ball is pretty good. He had a couple of different. I think he was throwing a curveball and a slider. But first time getting to see him live since his high school days, so I was impressed with what he did. But this was kind of the theme. There were some things I liked about all the arms that came in. Josh Blum comes in a huge situation, gets out of it. But then
Three
there's other.
sliders, three strikes, and a strikeout with the bases loaded.
Not too bad. But then what does he do the next inning when he comes back out? And now it's an unearned run, but he gives up a run. Same thing with Xavier Martinez. I think if I remember correctly, he had a, first couple batters were good, and then, he gave up some runs. So there was some positives to take away from each of those, but, it just wasn't competitive enough. It wasn't the consistency that you need to be there. And I thought that they got beat by Carter Young, who's a guy who shouldn't be beating USC, the starting pitcher for Grand Canyon. Now he's added some velocity, but he's a kid that's like 5'8". He used to be 135, 140 pounds. Now he's put on some weight and his velocity has ticked up. And I think maybe that surprised USC a little bit, but he's not a guy that should be beating you on Saturday. They threw their number two guy on Friday, Grand Canyon did, who's a freshman who's got just absolutely a disgusting changeup. It's absolutely one of the best pitches I've seen in a long time. So when I saw that he was pitching, and it was all because of the schedule they have this week, not pitching against USC, I said, oh, that's a good thing for USC. They're going to get the third guy instead of the second best guy on that. And they didn't do anything against Carter Young. And then the lefty comes in, Grant Richardson, who's a pro prospect as well for Grand Canyon, throwing 93, 95, left hand side, 6'4", 6'5", and they did nothing against him. Six Ks and three innings for him. So I was much more impressed with the Grand Canyon in this game than I was USC.
Yeah, and I think we said that Grand Canyon was going to be probably the best team that USC faced of a three. And I think you come out of the weekend knowing that's definitely a fact. They're better than Ohio State and they're better than BYU. But I think the point that you made that there are positives for most pitchers that came in for USC, but I don't think there's any pitcher that pitched the entire weekend, maybe save for one or two, where it's only positives and you're not finding something negative. Because if I were just to read out to you, Shuckin, that USC pitchers struck out 15 on Friday, USC pitchers struck out 10 on Saturday, and USC pitching struck out another 12 on Sunday. So we mentioned USC's strikeout problem at the plate, and USC's pitching struck out way more than that throughout the entire weekend. But it doesn't come without its issues. That's seven walks on Sunday, which kind of renders the 12 strikeouts not useless, but not as good. You've got seven walks again on Saturday, and you walked five on Friday. So 19 walks across a three-game series, and it's not a series, but it's an event that can't happen. And I know it's the early part of the season, but that's what Seth Etherton, I think, when he comes back here to Los Angeles and they're working, out of the bullpen or on the mounds tomorrow ahead of the game against UC San Diego, that's really something that he's going to be harping on because these arms are legit, Chuck, and I think you could tell that You can't strike out 15 guys on a Friday night if you don't have good stuff or if you don't have good pitchers that want to be competitive and everything like that, but you can't walk that many guys. Some of the guys that stood out, you mentioned Josh Blum. I thought that situation he came in was really big for him because we've heard he could be one of those guys at the back end of a bullpen. Now, USC wasn't in a save situation or a real tense eighth or ninth inning situation. That was probably the closest they got, and I thought he handled that really well. You had a couple of freshmen pitch with Brody Purcell, who finished out the game against BYU on Friday, went 1.1, gave up two hits, but struck out three. Michael Ebner, I think, got four outs, and all four of them were strikeouts. But one of the interesting things against GCU as well, as I think you touched on a good amount of that game, Mason Edwards was one of the arms that came out on the mound. And we had heard from Seth Etherton that he is supposed to be the Tuesday starter for USC against UC San Diego. So I would assume this episode's coming out on Tuesday. He's supposed to be making the start for USC tonight, but the Trojans wanted to get him, it seemed like, at least one inning of experience before his first career start. So he threw one inning in relief against GCU after Stromsburg and Blatter. One inning, two hits, a walk, two strikeouts. One of those walks was intentional, but so he clearly is in the rotation. But I thought it was interesting that USC, ahead of him starting, wanted him to pitch on a Saturday. And so there were some interesting decisions, but I think you look at just the box scores and how many different guys pitched for USC, it's reflective of the kind of games they were playing where the starters did get hit around a little bit more than normal, but they were trying a lot of arms out. And I think you found positives with most guys, but no one was all positive, no negative.
Yeah, I think there definitely this is a trial period, you know, who can pitch when the lights are on type of thing. And I did think it was interesting that Edwards pitched. You know, maybe he doesn't pitch on Tuesday. We'll see. He definitely could. Blatter could definitely be an option. You know, USC has two games scheduled this midweek. So, you know, if these games don't get rained out, then maybe both those guys end up being your starters. And you just want to get their feet wet because Blatter had pitched a little bit at Alabama, but obviously had not pitched for USC. So, you know, it could be another option there. Could be other options that they decide to use as well in those midweek games. The Sunday game, you know, checking this one out, it was USC takes the lead, their first lead of the weekend. In the fourth inning, they score two runs. They take advantage of an error. You know, they got back-to-back doubles to take the lead from Jacob Galloway and Luca DiPaolo. And then then DiPaolo scores on an error by Ohio State. USC takes the lead, but immediately they give up a run in the bottom half. And then the next inning, they give up two runs. And then the next inning, they give up a run. So, you know, quickly they're down 4-2, and then Ohio State's able to add an insurance run in the eighth because USC really didn't threaten after that. You know, just weren't a lot of opportunities for them to do much. They had, after the inning where they scored a couple runs, they had two hits the rest of the game. So, you know, when you only have five hits, you're not getting a ton of base runners, and Ohio State didn't give them any. That was a big difference. Because I saw Ohio State play their season opener on Friday, and they walked, I think, 10 guys, and they lost to Boston College 9-2. They got beat pretty thoroughly. And when I was talking to Bill Mozzello, who's a former USC assistant, actually, long way back, but I was talking with him after the game on Sunday, and he said, yeah, we played much better baseball on Saturday and Sunday. He said, you saw us on Friday, and, you know, he was coming out of it going, what do I have? What is this? You don't want to make too much out of one game. But he's like, I was confident in my team going in. And you go, this team is not playing very well. But so he was happy to see his team get back to the baseline, get back, reset, and play much better on Saturday, Sunday. And that will be the challenge for USC going forward from this weekend. Because Ohio State, they didn't do anything explosive in this game. You know, there wasn't anything, oh my goodness, whoa, Ohio State's going to run through the Big Ten, but they were sound. And that's what USC was all last season and what they were not this weekend. From the errors to the walks for the pitching staff, 19 walks like you mentioned, to the strikeouts for the offense, 32 strikeouts in a weekend. So, you know, all those things, each of those three pieces are the pieces that are controllable. Now, you can attack, you can give up a ton of runs, a ton of hits as a pitcher, but if you don't walk guys, you give yourself a better chance. As a hitter, if you put the ball in play, especially at the college level, you give yourself a chance. So, and if you take care of the baseball, you help out your pitchers, innings are much shorter, you give yourself a chance. So eliminate the mistakes that aren't giving you a chance to win, and then you go from there and just try to start building on that with, okay, now you get a base hit, extra base hit, all those type of things. USC just didn't give themselves a chance much the weekend. I know you didn't see a ton of the Ohio State game. I saw two full games. You saw two full games. But any other standout things from you from the Ohio State game?
I just think that I want to focus, I think, a little bit more on the hitting side, because USC only had five hits. Three of them came from one person, and it was clearly the best hitter of the weekend, and that was Jacob Galloway. I think he is probably the only hitter that comes out pretty satisfied with the way that he played during the weekend. Ethan Hedges had a two-hit game. Kevin Takuchi, the freshman, came in, and you know, he hit a double for his first collegiate hit. But then Galloway, by and large, is the only one that comes out feeling pretty satisfied about the way he played. Played three games, got 11 at-bats, had five hits. Two of them were doubles. One is the only home run USC hit during the weekend. You know, even though the five hits, though, USC didn't have anyone on base, so five of those hits and only one RBI, and it was him knocking himself in on the home run. But, you know, he played pretty well defensively again, and I think it, from a guy that we heard from, Andy Stankwitz, was one of the most consistent hitters throughout the offseason, it's good to see that translate for him into the start of the regular season. But I think you have to start looking too at some of the, you know, the guys that are supposed to be the leaders of this offense that you really want to step up. Austin O'Vern didn't have his greatest weekend. He had a couple balls hard. You know, I think his first at bat of the weekend hit a line drive to the second baseman who dove and caught it and it couldn't go into right. Obviously, he had the triple on Friday, which is, you know, cool to see him had another triple. I don't think he'll ever stop hitting him, but one hit in 12 at bats during the weekend. You had Ryan Jackson. He had one hit in 10 at bats. Bryce Martin Grudzielanik, who struggled at the on defense a lot more than I think we were expecting, not playing shortstop but playing second base, had a handful of errors, I believe three total on the weekend, didn't have a hit and only got five at-bats on the weekend. So I think you're looking at those guys that they need to step up, because they're the ones that, you know, don't want to place too much pressure on them, but they're the ones that are supposed to pace this offense. So when the three of them combine for two hits and you make, you know, Hedges or Galloway do everything in the offense, it's going to be hard. And I think it starts with O'Vern, and maybe it's too much pressure to put on him, but the expectation is for him to be one of the top 50 to 100 players in college baseball, and hitting at the leadoff spot, he paces a lot of what this group is going to do offensively. And I think you don't be too concerned with the weekend, but the way we saw him play down the stretch of Pac-12 play last year and dealing with some injuries this summer and kind of struggling in the Cape League at different times and trying out for Team USA, you hope he can bounce back from the way he played at the end of last year and his summer to get back on the path that we saw him earlier in the year. And I think once you see him getting on base, it's a little bit of a momentum thing. The ball will start rolling. I just felt like that's what USC was missing all weekend. The ball was stagnant the entire time. There was really no momentum for the group. Normally you've got good defense that can lead to good hitting, or good pitching can lead to good hitting. And it was just kind of like the bad pitching would lead to the team going cold at the plate. That wouldn't help out the pitching, which in turn wouldn't help out the defense. And it was just that negative spiral where you're snowballing in the wrong way.
Yeah. And I'm not even going to put it on one person or two people or three people.
Yeah.
It's the entire team outside of Jacob Galloway. Jacob Galloway is the only person that hit well. Now Hedges drove some balls to the warning track, but make an adjustment. Hit a line drive rather than, you know, getting underneath everything. If you're playing in big league ballparks, big league spring training ballparks, and you're playing at night and the ball's not traveling because it's not hot out there yet, you know, those balls might go out during the day. They didn't at night. You know, he hit at least three to the warning track, probably four, maybe five. So he's somebody, Chris Brown, five strikeouts and nine plate appearances. Make an adjustment. Like, those are the things that you look at. And maybe it was the coaching staff saying, all right, you guys try it your way. All right, you see how the results didn't work. Now it's time to come back. Let's get back to work type of thing. That's something you can do in college baseball. You can let people go a little bit for one weekend and say, all right, we got to fix these things. The interesting thing I thought on Sunday was the lineup switch. I think that was the most interesting thing to me, is that Austin O'Vern moves out of the leadoff spot. Ryan Jackson takes over the leadoff spot. That's one. And also, Vern finishes the weekend with five Ks. That's more than you want from your leadoff hitter. You know, he's got to put the ball in play, let those wheels do their thing. But then towards the bottom of the lineup, Tevin Takuchi gets in. Takauchi, they were announced it different than how Andy Stankiewicz and Travis Jewett have told us. So now I'm really confused on how to pronounce it.
USC's got a pronunciation guide, and his name isn't on it. Cover Rubius's name isn't on it. It's like, I know how to pronounce Aoki. It's these guys that I think most people will have a problem with. I think on MLB Network, they were calling Josh Blum, Josh Bloom. So, you know, but yeah, that's, I'll check with them tomorrow when we go to the game, but I want to say it's Takuchi because that's the way that Andy Stankwitz was saying it. And I feel like he's the guy you trust on the pronunciation.
He gets in, he gets his first career start, as well as USC football fans will be happy to see that Deuce Robinson gets his first start. He played about 5 or 6 innings. They pinch hit for him in the 7th or 8th with Carson Wells, righty lefty splits there. But Deuce Robinson, he had 2 at bats. He battled in the first one. He fouled a couple pitches off before striking out. The second one, he lines a ball to right field for an out. But overall, solid start for him, at least just to get his feet wet. And didn't really have any action in the outfield for him. But, whereas some of the freshmen are making some mistakes defensively, that was not an issue there necessarily. You want to see him put the ball in play each time. You want to see him get a base hit. You want to see him run, all those type things. But the fact that he's in there, I thought that was very notable. The fact, we didn't know if we were going to see him anytime soon, but to sprinkle him in there, get him an opportunity, I think that was emblematic of the weekend. If the offense is rolling, I don't think Deuce Robinson is getting a start on Sunday. But with everyone struggling, they made some changes, gave some guys some opportunities. We saw the inverted lineup, if you want to, or inverted defensive lineup, if you want to say, with Chris Brown at first and Hedges at third. Covarrubias moved to second base. That took Bryce Martin and Grzelcyk out of the game, or out of the lineup. So we saw some differences there, and that's something this team can do. Like we said that was going to be a strength of this group is, hey, someone's struggling. You get somebody else in there, and you have options to do that. So I thought that was the first time we saw it, and I thought it was interesting to see so early in the season. But just, hey, things didn't go right the first 2 games. We're going to switch it up, try something different. Didn't work necessarily. We'll see how the lineup looks when they play tonight or tomorrow if the games get in because of the rain again. The positives from the Sunday game against Ohio State, I think, came on the mound, seeing Eric Hammond pitch. And his stat line doesn't look very good either. But I thought he probably pitched the best out of the 3 starters. I thought that he looked good, especially early in the game, was attacking. He gives up a run in the 4th. In the 5th inning, he came out, and the 2 runs scored after he came out. So it hurts his stat line there, if I remember correctly, on when he came out and all that type of stuff. But he showed – it looked better. It looked better than what it did last year. Now, the velo is not necessarily up way higher or anything. I think he was hitting some 93s, maybe touched a 94 in the first inning. I got there a little bit late from another ballpark, so I didn't see all the gun readings as I was kind of settling in. But he settled in at 91. It was pretty consistent there. He was able to throw his off-speed stuff for strikes. It's something to grow from for him, too, a positive sign for him. I think that was the biggest thing to take away from that game, though.
Yeah, and I think you feel confident that Tyler Stromsborg and Caden Aoki will figure their things out. If Eric Hammond had come out and had a really bad start in the first weekend, you don't have as much of that leeway from past experience to say, no, this guy will definitely bounce back. And so it's good to see him come out and have a good first start. And this could be a guy where he could rise up the rotation later in the week. From what we heard from Seth Etherton, or later in the season, sorry. From what we heard from Seth Etherton, he doesn't want to put any of these spots in stone. So he said, Caden Aoki will pitch on Fridays until we decide he doesn't, deserve that role anymore. Or you already saw Tyler Stromsworth go from Friday to Saturday. Maybe he gets the Friday spot back, but maybe Eric Hammond pitches well enough and he's got the stuff that USC moves him forward. So I think everything's in flux right now, but it was good to see him go out there. And even though the stat line, I don't think necessarily reflects it, I think you're right. He did pitch the best out of any of USC's 3 starters. And some of the relievers that came in, obviously this is the game that USC allowed the least runs. Some of them pitched pretty well. I think Michael Ebner, just looking at the stat line as a whole, 1.1 innings pitched. All of those outs were strikeouts. He struck out 4, only walked 1, gave up 1 run, but it wasn't earned. But faced 6 batters and struck out 4. For a guy that we weren't really sure what to expect last year, we heard from Andy Stankiewicz and Seth Etherton that they could be guys that are him and Fisher Johnson could be starters / relievers or guys in relief that could go in long relief. It was good to see him go out there, and I didn't know he had that kind of strikeout stuff in him, but he obviously had a good performance. And another thing that I want to mention is really everyone pitched except for a couple of freshmen and Fisher Johnson, which would make me not surprised if Johnson starts or pitches a lot in one of these 2 midweek games. But, Ebner, a guy who made 8 appearances for USC last year, I think gave up 11 hits. He only struck out 6 in 9 innings last year. So to come out and strike out 4 and 1 in the 3rd, he could have some different stuff this season. And USC's looking for someone to step up and fill some of these bullpen spots and be a reliable arm that they can use a lot. And maybe Ebner could be one of those guys going forward during the year.
Yeah, he struck out the side in his first inning. He comes back out and gets done in by his defense. Reached on error by a second baseman, and then just dropped a fly ball in right field. Like it just wasn't pretty. And then so now it's ends up being second and third after a stolen base. He strikes out one of Ohio State's top hitters who had got a double earlier in the game, RBI double. He intentionally walks somebody and comes out of the game. And then Blum comes in, gives up sac fly, and then strikes somebody out. So get out of there with limited damage for the position that they were put in between the two of them. So yeah, I thought Ebner was probably the best reliever that I saw this weekend as far as what he did. I thought the stuff wise, you know, Watson's stuff is really good. I saw him on his bad outing. He had two outings. Channing Austin pitched, you know, showed okay stuff. I didn't see anything close to 97s or anything like we've been hearing about. But Blum, you know, the slider was really good. The slider was nasty. So that stood out. Tostrup came up in the JUCO transfer, the lefty. He came in a similar situation as Blum had. And, you know, he got two or, yeah, he got two outs. He did walk in a run in the situation when the bases loaded. He comes in and gets a strikeout. Walks someone on 3-2 count. The dugout was not very happy with, and he gives him a line out that gets out of the inning. But you know, he looked fine to me. The second inning, he came back out and did not look very good. So a lot of stuff to grow from, a lot of stuff to look at as we go forward. But with that, we're going to jump into our break, and then Jack and I are going to come back to look forward to what this week could hold for USC and point out the couple of areas where we want to see the biggest improvements quickly.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can always send them in to podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you say the Dado download, the baseball pod, the one with Jack on it in the headline to make sure it gets directed to us. Jack, we looked at the past. Let's move past it. It's one weekend. It's the opening weekend. It was rough, but where can USC improve? What do they need to do this week? Let's look forward and look at what USC has coming up this week. Give us the schedule, who they play, what do they got to do going forward here? They got a 5-game week this week, you know, looking forward from the midweeks on with potentially 2 games in the midweek and then a weekend series.
Yeah, this is all kind of rain pending. It was pouring here today, but it's supposed to lighten up tomorrow. Tomorrow will be the day that this comes out, which is Tuesday. They've got
you
two.
You are throwing
games
off the time continuum here.
We are recording this on Monday.
You got to know what day we're publishing and just say that it's that day at all times. Come on.
Nah,
have you not watched?
That's lying. Come on. USC has two midweek games. They're both played at the same stadium. One is a home game and one is a road game. So they play their first fake home game.
Welcome against, to 2024.
Against UC San Diego today on Tuesday. That will be a home game at LMU. And then they play LMU at LMU as a road team on Wednesday. And then they go to Orange County to play in Great Park against Portland for their first three-game series and then their first real home series of the year. I think the one thing that you're looking for USC is they came into this season expecting that they needed to improve at playing on the road, playing away from home, developing a home atmosphere despite not playing at Dado Field. I would hope that this weekend where they struggled doesn't cloud their perspective of that, but it also could be a positive where they're focused on a lot of things right now, Shotgun, that maybe they don't have the time to think about the fact they're not playing at their home stadium because right now they're just focused on getting a win. But I think for USC, you'd look to come out and you've got four games at home and five games in Southern California. Play your best when you're closest to home. And I know you're not going to play at home, but this is about as close to home as you're going to get this season, is being able to play five games in Southern California in a week. So establish that fake home field advantage, play well close to home. I think that's what you're looking for USC, but they'll play some good teams. I mean, UC San Diego, as we mentioned, went 34-18 last year, won the Big West, favored to win the Big West again this year. LMU is competitive at times, and then Portland went 31-23 last year. So USC isn't, you know, getting a big break or anything like that, but we'll see how they can compete against these teams. I know UCSD gave them a run for their money last year. I think Trojans won 4-3, but this is another one, a team 3-0 coming off of sweeping San Jose State that could beat USC, and we'll see if the Trojans do get their first win today on Tuesday.
Yeah, they're playing UC San Diego, who is, like you said, coming off a sweep against San Jose State, who was our prediction for D1 baseball to be the team to beat in the Mountain West. They made the tournament last year. They won the Mountain West. So, you know, I think that's a loud sweep to start the season. And they did it in a couple different ways. They won a pitcher's duel to begin with. They blew them out in the second game, 15-0. In the third game, I think it was like 8-2 or something. But they basically dominated the series. And they crushed the ball. They hit 330 as a team. You know, they had drove in, they had 30 runs on the weekend. So, you know, led by, let's see, who was the kind of leading? Brock Klesic had five RBIs and a homer. You know, they didn't have a ton of extra base hits in the weekend, but they just hit line drives everywhere and had a bunch of hits for them. So they're a team to watch out for. I don't think they're the favorite in the Big West this season. I think that's definitely UC Irvine and UC Santa Barbara, but UC San Diego has definitely made some noise since making the jump from Division II to Division I. And so they're going to be a challenging team. And, you know, USC, they'll have to work cut out against the offensive lineup of UC San Diego.
Yeah, and you mentioned a pitcher's duel on Friday. They've got one of the best pitching prospects in the country, Ryan Forcucci, I think is how you pronounce the name. He pitched on Friday. You're not going to get their Friday starter on a Tuesday, so USC doesn't have to face him, which will be nice. And so the question is, who pitches for USC? We heard it's supposed to be Mason Edwards. Does that change? And then what can UC San Diego patch together? You never really know what to expect, especially these first couple midweek matchups. Midweeks are always up in the air, and normally they're patchwork where a lot of pitchers throw, and USC might try and do the same thing again, especially shocking with the fact they've got two midweeks this week and a series this weekend. Normally you don't see the back-to-back Tuesday-Wednesday games. So for USC, who already had to use a lot of pitching over the weekend, it'll be interesting to see how they balance the two midweek games, as well as pitching again on the weekend.
Yeah, and like you said, the Forcucci is elite. He had 11 strikeouts in 5 minutes. USC's not going to face him. If you want to see UC San Diego in the future, that's a guy who could be a early round draft pick, top five round draft pick. But they also have their closer, Isaac Martinez. Isaac with a Z, by the way. C and a K.
Z-A-A-K, yeah.
Yeah, it's spelled unique. And he pitches unique, as in then he strikes a bunch of guys out too. He had 9 Ks in 2 appearances, got 2 saves against San Jose State. And, you know, struck out 9 guys in 5 innings. He didn't give up a hit. He gave up an unearned run. So, you know, he was really good. He's a kid from Glendora, as lefty, who's pretty solid. That's a guy they could end up seeing on Tuesday potentially. Now the fact that he pitched twice on the weekend, In fact, he threw five innings. Maybe that rules him out. But if it's a close game, they got a one-run lead at the end, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the guy that comes in at the very end. So they do have some arms there as well. And on Wednesday, USC will move. I'm wondering if they're going to move dugouts. Like, are they going to be in the, are they going to be the home team dugout when they're playing as the home team? And then, because I don't think there's a big advantage or disadvantage, maybe the bullpen's a little bit nicer on the home team side at LMU, but they're going to move to the other side of the field, potentially the other dugout, because they will be the away team playing against LMU, who is coming off a solid weekend. They went 2-1 against Sacramento State. Now, LMU won the regular season WCC last year. They are not predicted to win this year, but that's because they lost a ton of talented guys. They lost their coach. He went to Washington State. But they got in Donovan Fergus from UC Santa Barbara, and he's a guy, he's a coach I love. He's like Travis Jewett. You can talk hitting with him for days. He is, you know, super unique character. He's awesome. And he decided there's two different ways you can go about when you take over a program. You can keep everyone you've already got and kind of try to build through the high school ranks and maybe put a couple of transfer pieces in, more what USC did last year. Or you can burn it all down and try to bring as many new guys as you can that you know what they can do, you recruited them type of thing. And that's more of what LMU did this year. They brought in a number of grad transfers. They're only going to be there for 1 year. But the idea is to, okay, let us show what we can do as a coaching staff and develop these guys. That way the next round of recruits we can go get, because it was already so late in the recruiting cycle when they were hired. But they got a couple big-time arms. Seamus Barrett is a Louisville transfer that's been with the program for a few years, but he's up to like 97. He's a guy that USC could see on Wednesday. Jacob Hughes is a reliever from Oregon. You know, there's pieces throughout from that have come from big programs that haven't necessarily had a ton of success at their previous programs, but they're off to a good start and they're hitting really well. And Kadeem Jaw, D-I-A-W, is the kid to watch for LMU. He's a catcher. He plays outfield, but he's a pro prospect. He's a potential big leaguer in the future. He batted 438 the opening weekend, 7 for 16, and he stole a couple bases as well. He's athletic. He moves well. You know, it'll be an interesting – if he catches, it'll be an interesting catcher matchup between him and Galloway if both of those guys end up behind the plate, because both of them are smaller, more athletic guys. Another guy to keep an eye on is Daylon Adderley, who is a transfer from, I want to say it was Alabama State, is from a SWAC school. He was the SWAC player of the year last year, batted over 400, and he can run, he can hit for power. He's a guy to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, I mean, Jaw had as many hits in his weekend as USC had in the first two games, 7 hits. And as a team, LMU, lost the number for a second. LMU had 32 hits in the first weekend. So USC is probably a little envious. Obviously, you know, it's Sacramento State. You're not playing as good a competition, but Sacramento State, you know, competed with USC last year. So
Sacramento State's good.
So 32 hits in the weekend, and pitching, I think they only walked 14. USC walked 10 in a game. So definitely a better start for LMU during the season, even though they're only 2-1. So we'll see. That'll probably be one of the most tired that USC's pitching staff will be this entire season, where you're coming off of 4 games in 5 days and you have to have another midweek game. So we'll see if USC's pitching, especially at it's probably one most depleted moment of the season so far, will be able to pitch against this solidly hitting LMU team. But then shotgun, USC plays Portland over the weekend.
You mentioned that LMU only had what'd you say? They had 14 walks.
14 walks.
They did have 12 hit by pitches.
Oh, yeah, didn't see that.
Now, I should point that out, because the reason why I point that out is because 8 of them
were
one player.
That player was with me this summer, actually, which is really funny. I saw that and I thought, I'm like, wow, I didn't know during the summer that this guy would end up being famous. But Matt Mastriangelo was really, really good at getting on base for us this summer. But as I tweeted out, that was something else. He got hit 7 times in the first day of the season. Then they pulled him, and the person that they pinch hit for him also got hit in that second game of the doubleheader. And then when he played on Sunday, he got hit in another at-bat. So 8 hit-by-pitches in the weekend.
He actually got hit twice on Sunday, and they called him back to the plate and called a strike on it, said it was over the plate.
That's unbelievable.
So 9 times being hit by pitches during the weekend. It's got to be a record or something.
He could not get hit for the next 3 weeks, and he will still be leading college baseball in 3 weeks.
Hey, but maybe LMU was just trying to send a message like, this kid right here, we're going after him. And we're just going to hit him every time. No, that wasn't him.
I mean, what's the point of walking someone on four pitches when you can hit him on one?
That's true. Now you don't have to walk him on four. You just say, send him to first.
That doesn't hurt as much. So
true. So you getting the pain factor in there as well. But, yeah, they went 2-1. The game they lost, they actually blew in the ninth inning. They had an 8-6 lead and gave up three runs for Sacramento State to walk off. Otherwise, they could have swept the weekend as well. Would have been a terrific start. I mean, 2-1 is a good start for them as well with so many new faces and stuff. But LMU will be a formidable. All three of these teams they're playing this week, you look at it and you're just looking at the schedule and you're like, oh, yeah, USC is definitely going to beat them, right? But these are solid clubs. Now, LMU is a team that we'll see their depth. That'll be something that'll be questioned be challenged throughout the season, you know, especially if they have any injuries because, like I said, they had to reload. Like they had a dude on Friday last year. He was a third-round pick, I want to say. Their Saturday guy was really good for them too, and they lost both those guys. And so they're filling in roles and stuff, so they don't have as much depth. You go to Portland, though, you want to talk about a Friday guy. They're going to face Nick Brink on Friday, and he's my WCC Pitcher of the Year pick. You know, I think he had something like a 2-something ERA last year. He was, you know, fantastic for him. He comes back and will front that rotation. Portland's a program that's been on the rise. They've, you know, been getting better and better the last 3 or 4 years under Jeff Loomis. He took over a program that was just forgotten about, basically, and has built them up slowly, slowly. And they've got older guys. It's going to be a challenge. People will look at it. If USC loses some games this week, they'll be like, oh, they lost to UC San Diego. They lost to Ellen. And I'll be like, those are solid clubs. Now, those are the clubs you have to beat if you want to be a true regional team. But those are very easily losable games. These are not Marist. These are not, you know, some of the opponents that USC has faced to start seasons in the past. It's not Mount St. Mary's or something. Like, these are quality programs that are going to be good this year. They're going to be fighting for their conference titles and being regional teams themselves. So those are the ones that you need to go take care of business because – that's going to boost your RPI because when Portland goes and they're in a top three spot in the WCC throughout the season and UC San Diego is doing the same thing in the Big West, I don't know if LMU will do the same. I wouldn't be surprised if they do, but I could definitely see them fall in the middle of the pack. But that means they're getting a bunch of wins. And that means if you have beat them, that helps your RPI out. So these are big, important games in that regard because your playing teams are going to get a lot of wins throughout the season. So they got to take care of business. But Portland is no slouch for sure.
Yeah, I think the pitching is stronger for Portland than the hitting. I mean, just the pitching statistics through the first weekend going 2-1 against San Diego State are kind of obscene. 43 strikeouts across three games, just walked 8. You had Nick Brink. He went 6 innings, only gave up 3 hits, didn't give up an earned run. He struck out 9. Sam Stuhr, who I think started another game, 5 innings. He struck out 12 in 5 innings, which means he got 15 outs and 12 of them were strikeouts. So for USC, who obviously it's only been 3 games, had a strikeout problem through the first weekend of the season. You're just looking to see what these Portland pitchers will do against USC. So you want to be able to fix the strikeout problem before you have to face Portland on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Those games will be in Orange County. The rain is, I believe, supposed to stop by then. So while the midweek games may be in the air, the weekend games should be safer. But Portland swung it okay during the weekend. You know, 19 hits as a team. You had a handful of guys with 3. Christian Cooney, Jonas Salk, and Brady Bean all had 3 hits. Not a ton of extra base hits, 3 doubles and a home run. San Diego State gave USC a little bit of a push last year, but Portland played pretty well during the weekend this weekend and won 2 of the 3 games. I think one of them was a 13-inning game, but Portland, obviously, you said a lot of it, Chuck, and you know better than I do about some of these more intricate, smaller teams, but Portland is definitely not a team that you can look past on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about Nick Brink, and he's a legit pitcher. It's 91, 92. It's nothing overpowering necessarily, but he just spots everything up. He's really good. Sam Stuhr, on the other hand, it's 96, 97. He's an Oregon State transfer, you know, didn't really do much at Oregon State. You know, he was only 89-91 when I talked to Jeff Loomis earlier this offseason. He told me that when they picked up Stuhr out of the transfer portal, quality arm, you know, 89-91, they can work with that. He's been up to 96-97 this spring. I don't know what it was on Saturday, but had to be pretty damn good if it was 12 strikeouts in 5 minutes. You know, he's electric. You know, he has a hard slider to go with it. He has a hard curveball. He can throw both of those for strikes. He's actually the interesting thing is he's thrown his curveball and his slider more consistently for strikes than his fastball in the past. His fastball command has been the issue for him. But if he's harnessing that, and he only had 2 walks on, you know, in his first start at San Diego State. Now, San Diego State, I don't think they're very good. I think they're an overpower, a team that can be overpowered. So you can throw that fastball down the middle and feel comfortable that they're not going to do too much damage. But he's legit. He's going to be, you know, if he pitches like he did opening weekend, he'll be a top round pick as well. And then on Sundays, they have Joey Gartrell, 6'4", 215. You know, he's a guy that developed a sweeper during the offseason that has really helped hitters get off his fastball. They're really excited about him. So all three starters are going to be really good. Question is the depth of the pitching. You know, when you get in the bullpen, are there some pieces that you can hit? And then the offense, you know, you mentioned a couple of the guys, but they're a really old offense. You know, guys like Jake Holcroft has been around for – this is his, I think, fifth year starting for them. You know, fourth or fifth for him. He's been in the lineup since day one. And when he goes, the offense goes, is basically it. Christian Cooney's an older hitter they think is going to hit really well this season. Ben Pattisol is a four-year starter or fifth-year starter for Portland, shortstop. Not necessarily the greatest hitter, but if he can take a step forward, they think that, you know, that's another piece. And then they have a real dude in Zach Toglia, who if you recognize the name Toglia, because his brother, Michael, was at UCLA, who's now in the Rockies organization,
yep.
Was one of their top prospects. Didn't do very well last year in his first kind of true full year. But Zach is probably more athletic than his brother. He's a big power bat from the left-hand side as well, similar to his brother. So they've got some pieces. Don't think that this is a team that USC should run over. This is a legit team. So if USC wins the series, you say, okay, that's a good series win. Not like, oh, how did they not sweep Portland? Because there's teams out there that are on their schedule. You go, you really need to take care of business. You need to sweep them. But Portland, I think, is a solid squad. And I wouldn't be surprised if they are – I think the WCC is going to be really good this year. And I think that they're a team that's going to be right in the mix as well as Santa Clara, a team that I saw – did not play very well against Arizona State, but I'll get a chance to see them again this weekend as well. But, you know, I think that they're a team that definitely cannot be overlooked this week. This week is not a week, a get-right week for USC with the opponents they're playing.
They don't really have one early on in the season.
True.
You mentioned you had the three tough teams, and maybe Ohio State isn't going to be the greatest team in the Big Ten. Maybe BYU isn't going to win the Big 12 or anything. But obviously, playing in a tournament like that, the stakes feel a little bit higher. You mentioned this week's hard. We'll get to it next week, obviously, but I think they play Michigan on Tuesday, and then they have to head out to play two top 10 teams, TCU, who I think you guys rank fifth in the country twice, and Texas A&M, who's eighth once in Texas. That's the first 3 weeks of the season, and there is no break.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is, when you look at the full schedule, I guess this is the get-right week compared to the rest of the schedule. But it's not going to be easy. I honestly, this feels a lot like the men's basketball schedule, where it's like you better take advantage against the teams that you should beat but are tough, because there's no real breaks coming because they beefed up the schedule to play some other teams, you know, adding in some, you know, Vegas games and different things like that. So USC needs to take care of business. So they need to bounce back and go to work. They get back to practice on Monday, go to work, if they play on Tuesday, come out fired up and ready to go. And, you know, try to take care of business against UC San Diego, because you're not going to be facing their weekend arms. That's the advantage USC has. Fisher Johnson or Mason Edwards or Brock Blatter should have better stuff and be a better pitcher than your Tuesday, Wednesday guy for LMU or UC San Diego. Like, they just should be. So you need 5 innings from those guys, give you quality innings, and then use your depth that you have, the newfound depth that you have this year of your bullpen, and be able to take care of business that way. And your offense should be able to do a little bit more action against their midweek guys that are throwing. So that's the advantage USC has. Now, can they take advantage of it? That's what we'll see.
Yeah, you just want to make sure that you're not allowing this week to continue the snowball from the past weekend. Because if you snowball through this week and you've got to go face Michigan and Texas A&M and TCU next week, this season could get out of hand quickly. You know, it's only been 3 games, and I don't agree as well, too, shocking with the tweets you saw saying, oh, the season's over. you could do a lot of harm to your potential to make a regional if you slowly walk through this week. Maybe you only win two games this week, and then you go out there next week. Maybe you win one. At that point, if they won two this week and one next week, they'd be 3-9. I'm doing math here, 3-9. That's a tough start to the season, especially because you've lost a lot of your opportunities to get wins that could help you later in the year when it really matters.
Yeah, definitely. You got to take care of business. And when you get those big marquee matchups, you want to win them so that you help your RPI out as well. And like I said, these are good RPI games potentially too for USC, even though they won't be the marquee ones like TCU or Texas A&M. They are teams that are going to get a lot of wins, so it will help in that regard. So every weekend is going to be big for USC, but you know, it when you come off a sour opening weekend, you want to get back to work and you want to go attack it. And I think that's something that they'll do.
Yeah, and maybe the schedule doesn't make it a get right week, but USC needs to get right this week. And I think that you look and you don't want to carry the concerns from three games all the way into the season. And I think it would be unfair if you use this past weekend for USC as an indictment of, oh, the season's going to be over and everything like that. But I think you have to put a little bit of trust in the coaching staff, because this group is more talented than last year, and they got a lot out of that group from last year. But I think the thing with last year was they were able to build momentum at the start of the season. Then they were maybe let down a little bit later in the season, especially on the road. This season, they were thrown into the fire, and so we'll see if they can respond to that.
Yeah, and guys, just because someone starts slow doesn't mean they can't do anything for the season. Let's go back a couple of years. Let's go to the 2022 season. We'll start with Stanford. Stanford goes 9-8 in their first 17 games. One game above 500. They started out the Pac-12 play. They went 1-5 in Pac-12 play to start with. That team is a part of a program that is now, it has been to Omaha 3 straight years, the only program in the country that can say that, because they righted the ship and got going. So one bad weekend is not the end of things. For Stanford, that, like I said, they started 1-5 in conference play. That was lost a series at home to Oregon, got swept on the road at Arizona, and then they're like, all right, you know what? We should probably start playing now, and they did. So for USC, they should probably start playing now. We'll see if they do.
I think that's a really good way to put it, and I think you trust this coaching staff to, with what they were able to do last year and the pedigree that they've got. I mean, the GCU program that USC lost to, that we said was the best team, that program was built by Andy Stankiewicz. So he mentioned a couple times on the broadcast it was cool to be back and playing the same team and getting to exchange lineup cards with a former assistant of his from 9 years. He built that program. I think you trust that he can build the one here at USC, especially with some of the assistants that he's got right alongside him.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to my co-host, Jack Smith, and for all of you for listening. Please like, share, subscribe, or leave us a review, all those things. We hope that you can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.